Okay, we're back for episode 169. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well. Well, there's been some developments. Of course, I just heard, you informed me, and then I'm looking at the headline, that Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away.
And that's correct. And, I mean, we don't want to speak ill of the dead, so I won't say much, but I actually was hoping that Biden would have chosen her as his running mate, because it would have been an all-ghoul ticket.
Yeah, a Walking Dead ticket.
A Walking Dead, which would have fit right into the sort of zombie apocalypse theme that the government's trying to hoist on us. So she's gone. I don't think Trump will try to squeeze a candidate through the Senate at this point. I mean, you know, we were talking and the Republicans blocked Obama, so I would imagine they'll wait till after the election, which, you know, will be a typical theatrical production where everyone will think it's really important, but at the end of the day, it has no meaning at all because whoever they get, it will be a lifetime actor and just, you know, be a rubber stamp for the oligarchs on the real issues. So.
Yeah, I mean, even if they were, fill it with someone who's opposite of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's, leanings, someone would switch on the court and maintain the balance, which is always there to serve the interest of the oligarchs. These fake philosophical legal arguments, sophomoric arguments they have up there. But I think, Trump will be pressured to, if he is in a position to appoint a replacement, to keep the balance in the court. You got to keep the court 33% Jewish. And female, right? I guess she's the second. Are there two? Sonia Sotomayor, right? And Ruth Ginsburg. So he's going to have to appoint a Jewish woman, right?
Well, it'll have to be a cultural Marxist woman.
Yeah.
to keep the balance. And I'm sure there's thousands of them that he can choose from. But I would bet he wouldn't do that. I'll bet he goes with a white male lifetime actor, you know, a Zionist Catholic, someone who will give the impression to the people who like Trump that, you know, Trump has replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her insane legal positions, you know, on the, she was like 12 was the age of consent.
Yeah, that was one of her goals when she was
right. There, she was just
an activist.
Evil.
Yeah.
Anything. And so they'll be, it'll have a cosmetic upgrade. But on the key issues, well, as I said, I don't think it's going to matter.
Yeah, she was instrumental in implementing the Equal Rights Amendment, which had lost, largely because of the efforts of Phyllis Schlafly by the 1980s, early 1980s. And they even tried to extend its approval process illegally, by the way, unconstitutionally, and still failed because of the grassroots efforts to end it. And one of the reasons why it ended was the opponents of the amendment said that if this were passed, it could be construed to shut down single-sex education institutions like VMI or force them to integrate, allow, for co-ed education. And, of course, lo and behold, there were subsequent Supreme Court decisions with, I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg ruled on, which did do that, citing the 14th Amendment and other dubious parts of the, dubious interpretations of the Constitution to more or less implement the Equal Rights Amendment through judicial activism. Some people even said that it would mandate, it would outlaw single sex bathrooms, segregated sex bathrooms that you'd have to, the people could sue to access, the opposite sex bathrooms. Of course, we had that a few years ago, that crazed, phenomenon where there were transgendered people claiming they could go to the opposite sex bathrooms because they identified as the opposite sex. And, she has quite a legacy. She casts quite a long shadow, unfortunately. But again, she's not doing it on her own. It's not the power of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's, as we've, I think, highlighted and shown in a lot of our shows, is that this is a broad cultural program that's championed by the oligarchs, the foundations, the wealthy, the ruling elite. And she was just there to sort of implement it.
Yeah, she was a pawn, part of the Brave New World project to hoist world slavery. And which now with the COVID, the lockdown is really reaching a kind of climax, unfortunately. Been in touch with some of our followers in Australia. And as you mentioned, the incredible popularity of powers and principalities is really visible at this point, because we have at least one listener in every continent except Antarctica.
Well, if that's so, good, if I said that's good enough to declare a pandemic, it's, you know.
Right, good enough for us to be worldwide. But the people in Australia, it's very poignant, because in the last 3 weeks, I've had discussions with them about leaving. And I actually gave advice. My advice was, you know, because normally I say stay and fight, you know, I mean, that's kind of, I think, something we need to have more of as a people. But in this particular instance, when I heard about the circumstances, I suggested that you want to panic early. Don't wait, because it seemed to me that they would just, you know, get more and more locked down. They would try to isolate people, and that would they would not permit travel across the Australian states, which already had been basically prohibited, but was still easy to get across. This was like 2 weeks ago, a week ago, I guess. Not a week ago, but 2 weeks ago. Anyway, this week they instituted what they refer to as the Ring of Iron, which is
they're proud of it.
A lovely democratic concept.
Like the Iron Curtain, I guess you could say.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, the Iron Curtain. This is the Ring of Iron, not the Iron Curtain, but it is basically a Soviet style process. And so this includes electronic snooping of these trails that people have been using to leave, you know, like mountain trails and whatnot. Increased police control over in and out on any of the major highways, and huge fines, $5,000 per person who try to escape. And if it's a family, all of the family members are fined. So you can basically become bankrupt if you get caught. I will say that there is a cottage industry, evidently, of what you would call in Mexico coyotes, old didgeridoo Aussies who know the back trails and can, for a price, get you across the border. This is just so sad to see, you know, a nation like Australia reduced to this kind of groveling slavery tactics. But this is where it's at. And what I have said, because they, you know, they, for some reason, are curious about my opinion on this. I have one, but I'm not sure it's really that apt in regards to Australia. But what I said was is that COVID is very much like, can be seen as another 911. And if you recall, the draconian security measures that were put in place immediately after never went away. So if you think that COVID, the draconian security measures that have been put in place, are just going to disappear over the next few months, I would say look to 911 as your template, and you'll see it's the reverse, that once they put these things in, they always have an excuse to keep them in place. You always are going to have lines to, you know, wait in to get to your airplane for the rest of your life, because it's part of the slave training, it's part of the control, and it doesn't really matter what happens in terms of reality. They're not going to get rid of that that slave training process. And so I think that for the people in Melbourne, I don't know. I mean, this is a really very difficult decision, because they're risking so much by trying to leave now. And when they put the Ring of Iron in place, they also announced a lessening of some of the more draconian conditions. I mean, now you can go out of your house. There've been these other things that people hadn't been able to do, but now they can. You still can't assemble, of course. But nevertheless, that was the day they implemented the Ring of Iron. So, is it possible that there'll be a point in time when you'll be able to leave, Victoria, go to another state? I don't know. If it is possible to leave, if you can do it safely without any real chance of getting caught, and you feel you have to, I wouldn't hesitate. I talked to someone who was in Queensland, which is not under severe lockdown, and they said that it was very similar to California, that the people were just going in and out of their houses. There wasn't really noticeable, slavery on the streets. It was very relaxed. And so, who knows? It's a very confused situation, but we need to really watch Melbourne and Victoria, because I think that's the avant-garde of what is ahead for all of us.
Yeah, I read an article today that said that the Dan Andrews and Melbourne signed that Strong Cities network, which some say operates sort of as a parallel government to implement some of these things to coordinate these measures. And so it's interesting because I think under the law, people within the various states within in Australia have a right to travel, but it's like this these broad emergency power claims that they've invoked without any evidence. I get this again, go back to the fact that all this is over something that has no again a survival rate of 99.76%. That's probably higher if you if you discount comorbidity and people over the age of 80.
It's 100%.
Yeah, it's like 99, so it's really these it's hard to justify these measures. And again, in the United States, they keep citing these test spikes that, of course, everyone's asymptomatic, yet they've invoked these powers. Also in New Zealand, that they can detain you, put you under quarantine and require testing. And again, a lot of this is again that is perhaps setting people up for a forced vaccination program or a conditional vaccination program, which is pretty much be a forced vaccination program because they won't let you out of your prison cell unless you get a you get the
Well,
jab.
the most terrifying thing is this new bill, which actually has been passed by one of the two houses. It's strange. I don't quite understand how they're convening to be able to do this. Maybe they're doing it online. But in any case,
Yeah.
one of the houses in Victoria has already ruled on the new bill, which gives the authorities the ability to basically detain conspiracy theorists. But moreover, anyone who refuses to self-isolate and anyone that they label as high risk are
Yeah.
likely to spread COVID-19 negligently, which would be the conspiracy theory. So this is really the hardest edge of slave state imaginable.
Yeah, mind you, this is again, they can label you a carrier or a spreader or a threat or something for a virus or disease for which there is no reliable test, nor there is a clear definition of. It's they haven't even defined what the SARS-CoV-2 is, and they've gotten away from that. You see it in the rhetoric. Now it's just broad coronavirus, of which there are at least 200 generic types. So these
Yeah,
the
if
tests are
this
useless.
passes and if they start to implement it, this would literally be a prison state. There's no other way to describe it, because there would be no rule of law whatsoever. There would only be the power of the state.
Yeah, well, they're creating
State.
a standard for detention and arrest, which is ridiculous because anyone at any time could be could spread a cold or something, and it's creating a sort of it's making everyone and turning into a obsessive compulsive hypochondriac, and it's normalizing it. And there's no way that you can have any social intercourse or action or commerce with that type of that high state of paranoia or fear about something which is, again, which is so infinitesimally small in relative terms. I mean, it's to the
Yeah,
point,
I mean,
it's,
among other things, it would just end the capacity to ever have an economy in this area. It would put them on the trajectory for starvation. I mean,
Well, yeah, I mean,
how under those conditions, there would never be any guarantee that anyone could ever show up to work,
anywhere, yeah,
let
because
alone have an economy. I
you
mean,
can
the
infect
government would
somebody,
always
yeah.
be there analyzing whether or not you were permitted to go outside.
Yeah, that I heard this argument that the reason why the churches might shut down some of these businesses yet is because they fear of liability issues here. So now, since when has any business, place of a public accommodation or gathering, been considered legally responsible for a cold you might catch when you go there? Not to mention, in fact, how do you prove that's where you caught it? But you know, this is the new standard, and this is ridiculous, because that under those standards, you can never do anything. You can never have a venue, hold a public meeting, or a party, or reception, for fear that someone could sue them because that's where they caught the dreaded disease, which isn't that dreaded. Yeah. It's more dreaded than anything else, if it exists at all. You know? But it's,
well,
you know,
closer to home, I just throw a few cheerful bonbons in. The complete collapse of the American economy is going forward at full throttle. I think it was yesterday, the yellow cabs in New York blocked a bridge because they are completely starving to death. Mm-hmm. I mean, here are some statistics. The yellow cab announced that they handled 92% fewer fares in June versus the same month in 2019.
Okay.
92%. So now 82% of the 13,000 yellow taxi medallions are not even attempting to be operational, because there isn't enough customers to justify, you know, going out of the garage. So, I mean, this was, imagine, or think about how central cabs were to the economy and the life of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And to have it just wiped out like this shows you that this is not a city that's just going to bounce back. And then, of course, bear in mind that de Blasio, who I'm glad we did the show indicating he was a third generation oligarch, you know, agent, basically. So he is worried about Black Lives Matter at a time when the entire population that is remaining in the city is on the verge of having a complete collapse of the economy, which will be followed by a collapse in the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give another statistic. There's a business broker in the Cleveland area, and a friend of mine is from the area, and he sent me these statistics. He said a month ago he reported that in his region that there was 128 new listings for office spaces. He said normally in that period there would have been 12, so this was 10 times normal. And then 2 days ago he came out and he said, well, now it's up to almost 300 in this last week have applied. So this is obviously just grasping at straws, because the owners of these business properties know full well there's no one who's going to rent them out. They know that you can barely put 12 units onto the market even in a normal business activity time and expect to get, you know, a good tenant. But when you're up to nearly 300, you have what was a prosperous area of Cleveland. You have had a complete collapse. So now when you think about, you know, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Minneapolis, Los Angeles, the mainstream media is not reporting on a complete wipeout of all of the businesses that were the part of what sustained the middle class. And as I mentioned, Tim, my opinion is this was completely designed. In fact, I think this is what the Black Lives Matter attack was designed to help promote, was to wipe out these retail spaces so that they can't even try to reopen. So we're in the United States, we're being attacked in some ways very similar to what's going on in Melbourne. We're not seeing it, I think, as clearly, because, you know, it's a little, the Black Lives Matter attack was really very clever because it distracted people from the draconian and the consequences of the COVID lockdown. But nevertheless, the destruction is going on the pace, and we're I will make one of my predictions that I'm usually wrong on October 1st. October 1st, there's going to be a large tranche of the government money will stop being distributed. And there's also a number of businesses, because of it, it'll be the beginning of a quarter, that will take that moment to announce mass, if they're going to get rid of like a lot of employees. I would indicate like American Airlines may pull the plug on 30,000 people. And if you have a bunch of businesses do that at that date, which I think, and I'm sad to say, but I believe will happen, at the same time you have a few tens of million people who are no longer getting government largesse, I think you could have absolute fireworks at that point, because there will be so much pressure on the government to print money. And of course, this will be leading right up to the election. So I think actually it's all been designed to be a American battlefield where there'll be rioting, desperation, the beginning of starvation, and then an election, which will, in my opinion, be contested. And I mean, by that, I mean, the results won't be accepted. Both sides could claim to be, elected. And now you have, you have a, it's not even a third world condition. It's just a, it's a lump of chaos.
Well, out of the ashes will rise, you know, smart city of San Francisco and smart city of New York, right?
Maybe.
You know, because once the property values plummet, they can be bought up and renovated, and you can have all these smart, sustainable projects start, and you can have these new, shining new, high-tech, 24/7 monitoring cities that they...
Could be. It just depends how many people are left. It's between October the 1st and, say, the end of January. I don't think you'll have mass population reduction, but you could be on the way to, some very serious challenges to the American people. But you're right. I mean, if they want to take it, into a smart city world where they bring back the population as, I'm not sure what they would bring them back as, but they wouldn't be needed for anything. But they could keep them as inhabitants or pets. And they could definitely, smart city. I think they're going to try to move toward the Georgia Guidestone number of a half a billion. I don't know how quickly it will all take place, but I think that's the ultimate goal here.
Well, if they're not resisted. In the meantime, you have, Boris Johnson. He says it's too early to say if restrictions will be lifted by Christmas. He announces new lockdown rules. Boris Johnson admits lockdown rules have become complicated and confusing. A British Prime Minister added that we must act. Boris Johnson has urged people to limit social contact as much as possible, as he confirmed a ban on gatherings of more than six individuals in England will come into force this Monday. Speaking in Downing at a Downing Street news conference, the Prime Minister announced new measures that could put Christmas on hold, but pin hopes on a new massive testing regime being piloted in England next month. I think they're calling for like daily testing. Asked by Sky News political editor Beth Rigby whether, without a mass testing regime in place, people should accept having smaller gatherings at Christmas, the PM said, it's just too early to say. However, he said he is hopeful the new rules will get the current spike down. Of course, these are tests. No one's really sick. Mr. Johnson admitted the coronavirus rules had become complicated and confusing. He said the latest move, the biggest crackdown since the COVID-19 lockdown was eased earlier this summer, was aimed at simplifying and strengthening the rules and making them easier for everyone to understand. England's chief medical officer, Professor Chris Whitty, said restrictions on gatherings would be in place for a block of time. White House sources have told Sky News it will likely be 3 months or more before the measure is eased. So, yeah, here's some of those new rules. New social distancing marshals are set to be appointed to make sure people stick to the rules. So you can have, like, I guess, policemen with rulers or something hitting people with the rules.
Tim, I just am amazed they can pull this off at this point, because they've had a tremendous increase in spikes since middle of July. I mean, yes. If you recall, England got up to like around 5,000 tested cases.
Yeah, a day.
And then they went back to like 4,500. So it's been this enormous increase in cases, right?
Yeah.
However, the deaths are at zero. The deaths were in April and May, you had deaths of like over 1,000 a day in England. Today, five. And this is, I mean, there haven't had 20 deaths since July the 7th. So the deaths have been completely static, in absolute defiance of this, you know, dual bell curve graph of daily new cases. In fact, what the spikes and the death count should show the Brits is that there is absolutely no reason. The first lockdown was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But now, because there are no fatalities and there is this huge increase in cases, the Brits should just go, well, it looks like the virus is a nothing burger. We don't have to worry about it. It's the only rational way to look at the numbers. And incidentally, it's the same thing in Spain, where they've had an enormous increase in the testing positive, but no increase in death, you see. So we've got in England, you just have this. It's not even sophistry. It's just it is just saying to the population, you're too stupid to even look at the numbers and make any sense out of anything. You're literally like animals at this point, and we're just going to keep you locked down forever.
Yeah, pretty much. There's no justification for it, but we're going to do it anyway because we've declared an emergency.
Yeah,
you know.
Keep you enslaved,
which is interesting because here in the United States, matter point is that, of course, I've mentioned this a couple times before, is that in just before the lockdown, before Boris Johnson instituted the lockdown, the UK government itself took COVID-19 off its high consequence infectious disease list. So why the lockdown? You know, but then the UK is the home of Neil Ferguson and his study, right? So,
when you're looking at their recording of 4,500 cases a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've been recording in this latest spike since the end of July, they've been showing 3,000 cases a day, and it's going on for well over a month. And they're showing fatalities of like 2, 5,
yeah,
you know, 15. Remember that the original models, which were justifying the lockdown, were all based on the insane Imperial College, the one that Ferguson came up with, where he was saying there was going to be, you know, like a million Brits would die, whatever. Tim, you've got like four people. I mean, this wouldn't, at the current rate, you won't even have like 2,000 in a year. This cannot be the grounds. The death rate from, you know, June the 15th through September proves that the virus is not in any way lethal. So how can they do this? How can they talk about even further lockdown when they don't have anything to scare the public with anymore?
Well, you know, it's control of social media. I read somewhere that like in Dan Andrews, they have, you know, there's a whole thing about social media about more than half of it is fake. And this has a lot to do with, advertising fraud, how it's bots and these things. And you have all these reports, these web pages and on social media and internet sites in Australia, when there's a story or about Dan Andrews and his lockdown measures down there, they have all the same people commenting, saying, good job, Dan. Hope you get some rest. And, keep it up. And there's, hundreds of times these comments are all kind of variation of the same comment. And so their idea and what they're doing is they're, in order to create a public perception that the measures are indeed popular, when they're really wildly unpopular, they're you have bots posting positive comments regarding Dan Andrews, the premier of of Victoria. And so they've in the media they create this false consensus, and this is a standard technique that's developed out of the RAND Corporation. Really, it's where you create a false consensus, and then people just believe that, even though they themselves don't buy it, they think everyone else does. But the cumulative effect is everyone following it, and it, this creates a, I guess, obedience.
Yes, they you know, it's because we were going to talk about the Agenda 21 tonight and its relation to COVID, but moreover, just, it as a phenomena. And it's funny, but when I was looking into the thing, and I'm familiar with it, I realized that, how related it is to all of these other projects that we've subjected to. And it occurred to me that one useful phrase is the one that we should say among ourselves is that all they do is study us. I mean, this is they are obsessed with controlling us. And I was realizing because I was trying to put, Agenda 21 in historical context just to see where these ideas come from and what the meaning, which is very straightforward. The meaning is to frighten us to think about, an unsustainable destruction of the planet based on our existence, and of course this Agenda 21 goes back to the Club of Rome, and the ideas that were coming out of that organization. I mean, the population bomb and the baby boomers. I mean, notice the, the negative connotations, but it actually, you're talking about the bots. I mean, think about, like MK Ultra, and think about even the authoritarian personality, which was, let's face it, the result of a Jewish psychological team studying, at least they were claiming, studying Gentiles to come up with psychological tests that they could use to determine the propensity for fascism, right? Which was just absolute pseudo science. I mean, it was just like the bots with Dan Andrews just trying to create a, kind of a veneer of reasonability. But the fact is, it was really just a racial attack that gave them a rationale for this idea of Eros. They were going to introduce Eros as a counterbalance to fascism. And this isn't, I'm not kind of summarizing in my own opinion. I mean, this is what they wrote, is what they said. We're going to use Eros as propaganda and try to basically head off the fascism, which they defined as, any kind of authority, any kind of ethnic pride. You just go through the document, you can see what they had in mind. And so, and even that, of course, goes back further. You go back to Bernays and Freud. And then, of course, because, this is all coming in one way or another through the Frankfurt School, look at Gregor Lukacs, right? The Hungarian Soviet, So all they do is study us. They are constantly studying us, coming up with ways to make us crazy and slaves. I mean, this is, it just seems like this whole project has just is obsessed with these ideas, with this plan. And so when you get to Agenda 21, which is on people's minds right now because there's some legislations that are coming forward, I mean, you need to be able to see it in this overall context to I think to make sense of it. And the way that they've been able to get us to see our very existence as evil, as a problem, as something that, both ethnically, the ethnicities are bad and evil, so they have to be gotten rid of. But even like white male, I mean, look at how white male privilege is now being used as a battering ram to basically make white males have the impression they shouldn't be in existence, right? white male privilege. But there isn't much white male privilege because when you look at all of these projects, they are all actually designed against the white male. And this is the real power in our culture. I mean, think about movies, right? Think about, you know, the way the white male is characterized there. And then also think, you know, think about how they create horror. Well, I mean, look at like this COVID thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about all of the movies that have to do with that create the impression that there's going to be this, you know, medical epidemic that's going to wipe everyone out. Look at the zombie films.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, look at this. These things are all part of this process. They're not. They don't come up with a million zombie films because someone has a fixation on this is a way to make money. This is a propaganda process, right? And then, of course, look at the relationship between zombie films and all of the fake epidemics that have led up to COVID. Look at AIDS, right? Look at Ebola. I mean, how many times have they rolled out the idea that we're going to all be wiped out? We all live too close together. There are these viruses and bacteria that they're going to wipe us out. So we've been... And then, of course, the only hope we have in the movies is the scientists will come up with a vaccine.
Yes.
So so
the authorities, you got to depend on the authorities.
Right, the authoritarian individuals. So, and then, of course, you know, it's like our very reality has been attacked. I mean, think of 9/11. Think of how fake that whole thing was. And yet it's presented as like rock dead reality. Everyone thinks of it as real. I mean,
yeah, we're asked to remember it when no one actually understands it.
Right. I mean, but the thing that you just look at the CGI, the computer animation that was, you know, the whole thing was fake. It's just like COVID, but it's presented as real and it destroys our sense of reality. All of these things, you know, are making us less able to have any kind of power in the world. You know, we're being mentally debased and mentally enslaved so that something like Dan Andrews in Melbourne won't be met with force of arms, because that's really what should happen.
Well, yeah, these things are like movies. It's like, look at 9/11 and the spectacular explosions. And I've always wondered if it had been a rainy day that day, if the event would have gone down, because they needed the clear blue sky as stark contrast to the exploding buildings. And it was something out of a movie with the spectacular explosions. And, you know, of course, we associate something destructive as being this huge, you know, explosion. Actually, the bigger it is, actually, the less destructive it is. It's the ones that are quick and non-distinct that are actually the most destructive, because that's when you have more power concentrated. But if you ever watch a movie, a big explosion is always huge flames, right? Because that's visually more stimulating. So it is like you're watching a movie, even with the one-liners, like, you know, what's the... let's roll, you know, like Bruce Willis would say in a movie or something.
I mean, it's just insane. How about the Harley man?
Yeah.
Parker Walsh, he comes out and he flashes like the 666 sign.
Yeah.
And then he talks about how he saw the plane hit and then he saw the building collapse.
And he explains why.
And he explains why, but he launches into it. I mean, he's clearly memorized. He's a bad actor. And his line deliverance is not natural in any way. It's just like he's reading a script.
Obviously, the heat from the flames from the from the jet fuel.
Obviously, due to structural failure. I mean, it is so fake and so preposterous. Yeah. You know, the right approach is just to a group should get around him and arrest him and put him in chains. I mean, it's just insane that this is actually being given to the public as a real recording of the event. So. But you can see that all of these things have led up to COVID. COVID is really kind of the accumulation of this whole project, where they think they can really expand the slave state and the control over our behavior to where, you know, we aren't free to go out of our houses, we aren't free to talk to one another. And if the people in Australia, we can't even, basically have conspiracy theories about what's going on to us, because even that would be regarded as
that's incitement,
as illegal.
It's incitement. Now it's interesting because you mentioned some of these. You asked, with Bo, Joe, and Great Britain, doing these things without any justification, or these staggered reopenings or these phased reopenings or continued lockdowns and these things. How are they able to get away with it at this stage of the game when it's obviously a fraud? There was a recent case filed in Ohio against the governor and the state
yes.
restricting freedom, and this is John Rappaport writes on his blog. Ohio attorney Thomas Renz, on behalf of plaintiffs, has filed a case against the state of Ohio and Governor Mike DeWine. Renz is asking for a jury trial. This case in the current climate should provoke intense interest from the public and from every lawyer within hailing distance. Here is the impressive opening salvo in the court filing. I think the lawyer wrote this. In recent months, entire states have been imprisoned without due process and with the clear threat to impose such lockdowns again. Interstate travel has been severely restricted. Privacy rights have been devastated. Numerous businesses, takings without compensation, and many regulations have been implemented without statutory process requirements under the guise of a health emergency that is roughly as dangerous as a seasonal influenza outbreak. The plaintiffs in this case have all been injured in various capacities by these unconstitutional actions, and without action by the court, will be left without redress. More terrifying, without action by the court will be settling future precedent that will allow states to withhold fundamental constitutional rights in violation of U.S. Supreme Court precedent, circumventing the various levels of scrutiny applied to such rights and justify such actions under public emergency orders without subjecting those orders to any real review. Just trust the bureaucrats because they are the experts. Here's the most important point. We humbly ask the court in this case to recognize that the political process and operative orders are invalid if based on false or misleading information, and recognize the criticality that all future emergency orders must be based and maintained on clear, honest facts, particularly when such orders are infringing on constitutional rights. In other words, the declared state of emergency cannot stand on mere basis of arbitrary edict. Facts matter. Actual science matters. Reasons why an emergency is declared matter. People can't be locked down and restrained from earning a living and having contact with other human beings simply because a state authority decides to issue such orders. If this case goes to trial, the door will open to the presentation of fact and science. Attorney Renz, for the plaintiffs, is well aware of this, and his filing is studded with bold and accurate claims of fact. According to recent data from the Ohio COVID-19 dashboard, we can see that the spike in cases is actually just a spike in testing. The state went from a few thousand tests per day to 25,000 tests plus per day. The positivity rate for COVID-19 has remained fairly steady, but there have been more tests. When the emergency was declared, we heard a daily drumbeat about the danger and deaths related to COVID-19. Now that the case fatality rate has been shown to be roughly the same as a yearly flu, those death numbers are simply not scary to the public. As a result, the state sees no impact from talking about fatalities and has instead begun testing more so they could tell us that there are more cases. The PCR tests are generally viewed as the means of determining if a patient has COVID-19. The problem is that the inventor of the PCR test, who won a Nobel Prize in chemistry for the invention, specifically stated that the test was not well suited to and never designed to diagnose disease. Much has been made about this in the press and elsewhere, but the reason there are issues with the PCR testing in relation to COVID is that the PCR testing cannot detect how much of the virus exists in a person. Exposure of the existence of the incomplete traces of a virus do not mean a person is infected with a disease, which is part of the reason the PCR tests have an elevated rate of false positives. There is not even a true standard for testing. Instead, we have numerous tests from numerous vendors that may or may not have a similar standard for what it means to have COVID-19. The CDC, the governor, ODH, Ohio Department of Health, know this, so they have allowed for the diagnosis of cases based on meaningless criteria as a cough in the community in which the COVID supposedly exists. In plain English, this means that there is no valid pure 2019 nCoV virus isolates to test against. So instead, an educated best guess is being used. The question this leads us to is, how accurate can a test be for a virus that has not been defined? If our freedoms are to be abridged under an emergency declaration related to a disease, should not be a requirement that the disease at least be defined? As you can see, this case is being argued not only on constitutional grounds, but on major deep issues of science. The plaintiffs are not accepting the word from the experts. There's no reason why they or anyone should surrender and accept. So, you get us in a court where you can cross-examine, discovery, evidence, these things, showed the whole thing to be a fraud, and this could be a very important decision. I believe in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf's lockdowns have been declared unconstitutional by the federal constitution.
I didn't read the opinion on that, but I think it's pretty much like this, though I think the Ohio one is a little clearer, and it's trying to expose more of the fake science.
Yeah.
In Ohio, just the easy-to-understand standard that has been violated by the idea of new lockdowns, between April and, say, June, end of June, the cases were averaged like around 500. And then when they created the new testing protocol, they doubled. And so you had a doubling of the amount of cases. This was different than the bell curves in England thing. So you had a doubling of the new cases from like June through September. However, the deaths went down by one half during that period. So in other words, you had all of these cases at the beginning, then you had this incredible influx of new cases, but the deaths went down. And so this is the just obvious way to refute the idea that the pandemic is getting worse. Look at all these new cases. The deaths are down. And of course, bear in mind, the reason why that there are even any deaths at all are because they're defining, you know, we had that show where we talked about how with the definitions of COVID that they are using to determine if a person died of it, with the fake CDT death reporting system that got put into place on March the 23rd. The more people you test, the more people have these false positives, and therefore the larger your body count is. These aren't actual COVID deaths. It's just you've got, because you have more people through your more testing, you're going to get more false positives. And from that group, you're going to get more fatalities, and you'll have an increase in body count. There isn't anyone dying from Ohio from COVID.
Yeah. As Robert F. Kennedy Jr. pointed out, is if you simply reinstituted the reporting standards that were in place between 2002 and 2019 on death certificates, the death rate overall would drop 90%.
It'd go down 90%, but then bear in mind that 10%, those are just the actual false positives. Mm-hmm. You see, in other words, yeah, it isn't just the 90% that what he's referring to is the fact that they were able to get rid of the comorbidities.
Yes.
And the way it's waiting to be reported now, you put the comorbidities on page two so it doesn't even show up. These are all COVID deaths, though. In fact, everyone can see who is a doctor that, in fact, they didn't die of COVID. They died of all these other reasons, right? But the 10% who do not have comorbidities, those aren't people who are dying of COVID. You have to weigh the possibility that all of them would just be in the category of the false positives who also had the bad fortune to pass away after they'd come up with the false positive test.
And they happen to have, at some point, a coronavirus that pops up.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why the whole thing is the number that is the real number, the number that if you get into it and actually work the arithmetic, the best number is zero. It isn't like, well, there's 4% or 6%. The best number is zero. They are not even in a position where they can prove 1 or 2%. There could be people passing away from COVID in the United States, but man, you can't show it through the numbers that they have.
Yeah. Well, which gets us to our main topic for tonight is the original new normal, which the first time I even heard that term being used or phrased was in reference to Agenda 21. And yeah. Agenda 21, what is it? Well, Agenda 21 is the UN calls it or describes it. Agenda 21 is a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally nationally and locally by organizations of the United Nations system, governments, and major groups in every area in which humans impact on the environment. Agenda 21, the Rio Declaration on the Environment and Development, and the Statement of Principles for the Sustainable Management of Forests were adopted by more than 178 governments at the United Nations Conference at the Environment and Development, UNCED, held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in June 1992. The Commission on Sustainable Development was created in December 1992 to ensure effective follow-up of UNCED, to monitor and report on implementation of the agreements at the local, national, and regional international levels. The full implementation of Agenda 21, the program for further implementation of Agenda 21, and commitments to Rio principles were strongly reaffirmed at the World Summit on Sustainable Development held in Johannesburg in South Africa in September 2002. And so what we thought was interesting was you see a lot of what's called for in Agenda 21 being achieved in the COVID-19 pandemic, the reaction to it with the what's happened to the economy and what they talked about, the new normal, how things are being organized, the contact tracing, the monitoring and these things. All this, of course, was foreseen, or at least called for, with Agenda 21 and sustainable development, because you need all that monitoring and control to supposedly to maintain sustainable development, which is making sure that you preserve, conserve enough resources for future generations by restricting its use today. But a lot of the technocratic control measures that we see being implemented, and also the open discussion of the new normal, we saw with Agenda 21. So it's kind of it's curious and interesting to see that so much being achieved with COVID-19 that couldn't be achieved with the environmental hysteria that drove, the agenda behind Agenda 21.
Yeah, and Tim, hats off to you, because you're the only one, and this is, I've learned it through you, that the idea of the new normal comes from Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that since these things are so disparate, one is a pandemic and the other is a sustainable economic program, but yet they both have the same goal. Well, therefore, they're obviously both fake, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because it wouldn't be these things both create, contact tracing, which is implied by Agenda 21, and all of the restrictions on behavior. You know, they talk about the limiting of basically expending too much of the world's energy in any one human's activity, right? You have to reduce this down. They talk about living in these houses, which are not single family houses, but rather dense living, because these are more efficient. I mean, this is all, you can see it now coming. All of this is the vision of Agenda 21 is coming to pass now with the COVID restrictions. And you're absolutely right. Also, when you point out that they couldn't really use the environment as the basis for the slave state, it's too complicated, too esoteric too much of a stretch. So they went to the straight horror film of the zombie apocalypse to give the government the power to make people stay at home and get rid of their employment. I just think that the public should take the position they're being genocided and act accordingly. I'm not sure we would agree on this completely, but I honestly don't see how the food system is going to work in the next 12 months. There's just been too much of the economy that's been taken out of the process. It's all very interrelated. And once the food chains, once the supply chains start to seize up, I really believe that there won't be any way to feed them. And they'll be in a kind of Holodomor situation where they're saying, gee, we're doing the best we can. There just isn't any food available in the world right now. You're just going to have to get by without it for the next 6 months.
Yeah, if you look at your Agenda 21, it grew out of the Rio Summit in 1992, the Rio Treaty, which George Bush did sign. Of course, he had no authority to do that. But that itself was a response to the Brundtland Report in 1987. Yeah. And I think it was Our Common Future, the book, the report. And yes. Of course, this was commissioned by one Maurice Strong, who has ties to the oil industry. And I think he's passed away a couple of years ago, I think. But he's the guy who hot-skipped it out to China, out of Canada, because he got caught up in the oil for food scandal or something. But he was always a Rockefeller guy. And he was big for sustainable development. He had a famous quote in an interview in the 1990s. In I guess this was in a Canadian magazine. Maurice Strong said, "What if if a small group of world leaders were to conclude that the principal risk to the earth comes from actions of the rich countries? And if the world is to survive, those rich countries would have to sign an agreement reducing their impact on the environment. Will they do it? The group's conclusion is no. The rich countries won't do it. They won't change. So in order to save the planet, the group decides its only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse. Isn't it our responsibility to bring that about?" Well, what do you get with COVID-19? They can't do it with a monetary collapse. They do it with this. They just shut everything down, and so he's calling for an economic collapse. And he basically Maurice Strong, it's a famous quote, talks about how what isn't sustainable, and what isn't sustainable is single family homes, large families, tillage, farming. Really? Air conditioning, appliances, and these things. So pretty much all the comforts and accoutrements of what we associate with modern life, simply unsustainable. Of course, the billionaires who are funding this stuff, they're not going to give up their estates and their private jets. And I think the call for sustainability is a call for inventorying and control of all the world's resources, which means you're doing away with things like private property, use of private land, the land use restrictions and these things. And all this is done, ultimately, I think, so the few billionaires can control this resource.
Yeah, exactly.
Put it under the guise of government control or private partnerships, NGOs, and these things. And you have examples of NGOs like the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. These are, I would say, parallel or shadow governments that local governments, mayors, and governors sign on to get around the constitutional requirement for a treaty. Good example is, the United States didn't sign the Kyoto Protocols, but from what I understand is that like more than 1,000 mayors agreed to implement them through this local initiative. So basically, they're getting around these restrictions by implementing the policy locally, which is somewhat at least similar to what we saw with the lockdown, where the lockdowns were implemented locally.
It was exactly the same. And remember, Strong, he'd always talk about ballot box democracy in a derisive, manner. He hated it. He thought it produced weak governments because they produced governments that wouldn't do what the oligarchs wanted. And he had this clear, good vision for the future. And so he always talked about the modification of the ballot box democracy. I mean, this wasn't, I'm not exaggerating. This is actually what his position was. Now look at the laws that are going in place in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Look at how the ballot box democracy is being taken away. Right, the laws they're putting in place, where the government has this arbitrary capacity to define you in any way it needs in order to, supposedly save everyone else, protect everyone else. It's the end of ballot box democracy.
No, Agenda 21 and Sustainable Development openly talks about governance, not government. And the governance is implemented by unelected commissions and boards and governing bodies and homeowners association, these NGOs. And what happened was in 1990, after President Bush in 1992 signed the Rio Protocols, it wasn't law. But then President Clinton, his successor, created the President's Council on Sustainable Development. and this was implemented through various executive orders to the bureaucracy, trickling down into the states, and various governors did the similar thing. None of this is done without any public debate. And you'll see the American Planning Association, these boards, bodies that are infiltrated and taken over, and they act locally. This is through that thing, that group that I mentioned, the International ICLEI, the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, and they'll implement this policy locally. And they'll start playing games with how tax money are funded, like taxes, property taxes are then paid to subsidize sustainable, smart development in cities. You mentioned the stack housing with the retail below. This is their plan. This is heavily subsidized. And at the same time, they start implementing policies like not maintaining roads or pulverizing roads. So they're destroying, or they're letting the infrastructure decay or destroying it. So then what they call suburbia or urban sprawl or rural living no longer becomes practical, and this sets people up to be moved into the cities because their property is no longer viable. That's also with land use restrictions that are being imposed. The various zoning commissions, San Francisco is a great example of that. Virtually 100% of the rural area around San Francisco is you can't use it for anything. So obviously this is going to affect housing development, how you can use your property and the value of that property. And all this is done with an eye towards, again, ultimately stealing those resources and getting people off the land. Rewilding project, that's all part of sustainability. The treaty was rejected because of this, but the rewilding project has been implemented locally, and that's there to push people away from these rural areas, get them into these mega cities. That's envisioned like in China, you know, these ghost cities. That's the type of what they want to do, and they get people because people in the rural areas are less controllable, and they're more independent. You know, that's all part of it. Ironically, we've seen with COVID-19 there's been an initial flight from the cities, but I suspect they plan to reverse that.
Indeed, they're just not going to have the same people come back in. Obviously, the whatever was left of the white mercantile class is going to be long gone. I mean, they're going to have the brave new world, the epsilons and the deltas and the cities when the whole thing is done, if they can achieve it. And the white middle class, which is fleeing into the suburbs right now, had better go out and establish real strongholds, because they are on the chopping block at this point. There is this problem, which is the fundamental problem we've had for the last 1,000 years, basically, is that we are caught up in the fantasy that they presented. We see it as real. We think of Hillary or Donald, which one should we vote for? We don't see the larger picture. Mm-hmm. that we can't look to the Republican Party, for example, as it currently constructed and controlled to provide us with any effective democratic representation. It just isn't going to happen. You know, this idea of the Q theory that Trump is somehow going to work in a miraculous way and get rid of the bad people. This is a distraction and an incorrect fantasy. It's just not real. We have to do the hard work of democracy, which means we've got to actually go in there, organize ourselves, and just use force to get political representation. The situation in Melbourne is every single person, who's in the middle class in the United States should be looking at that with really, strong attention, because that's our future. If they can lock those people down and there's no rebellion, oh man, they'll try to roll that out in a big way.
If they're using unconstitutional, extra constitutional means to suppress the people, then turnabout's fair play, and the political leadership can no longer be considered immune or inviolate, and they should. And, so expect to, sic semper tyrannis.
Well, this is, I'm sad to say it, and I don't like to advocate violence, but when you're being locked down illegally and you can see that your food supply is in real trouble, you have the natural law of self-defense.
So dragging a pregnant woman off to jail for a internet posting, that's not violent?
Yeah.
Certainly implied violence.
Yeah. So the protests in Melbourne, I imagine, will become more violent and more frequent. I'm hoping the same thing will happen in Europe. I know that they're talking about a pretty good demonstration in London coming up. I know the people in Germany are trying to find another way to get another huge one going in Berlin. And I think every time that
people get together, they don't drop dead 2 weeks later. People start to wonder,
Yeah, exactly. Just that alone would help. But I think that the protests, as you pointed out, cannot just be an appeal, because you're appealing to a secret society that are all oath takers of this death cult. It's a waste of time to appeal to them to try to recognize your humanity. You know, here we are in the streets. There's millions of us. Recognize us. Do what we want.
There's no point trying to appeal to Mr. Andrews, who's a lizard, or Boris Johnson, who's just a puppet. That's obvious. Exactly. I mean, really?
I mean, what you need to do is to have rebellion. I mean, protests are only useful, in my opinion, because they show the people that the government is not what it claims to be, that it is a jackboot, thugged, illegitimate organization, and that the public wakes up through these demonstrations to the fact that we're going to have to rebel. We are going to have to rebel in every single city and in every country in the Western world, because they have gotten in. They are completely illegitimate. Remember, people like Johnson and Andrews are not legitimate. They did not come through any real democratic process. They never disclose that they are in the death cult and that their agenda is to kill us. You see, so therefore, now that we know that, we recognize they're completely legitimate. Mm-hmm. The governments are illegitimate. They are not, and they will. You cannot let them oversee a democratic process to try to vote them out.
Because obviously it's going to be rigged. Yeah, but it's. But
that isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to rebel. We need rebellion in every city and in every country, and I mean real rebellion, where it is ugly and brutal, but this is what we have to do if we're going to survive.
Well, just the acknowledgement that the political class are not representative. They are actually agents of foreign interests that are looking to enslave and impoverish the mass of humanity, the people. And so at that point, they have to be swept aside, at the very least, because they're the ones implementing. They're the ones on the ground. They're the ones implementing these things. The ruling elite need the managerial class to enforce these things, to implement them, and they can't do it without them. They do it under the cover of democracy, their elected legitimacy. They're the elected officials, the representatives of the people, and then they're the ones that are handling the emergency, you know, that they've declared, that they use as a pretext for their dictatorial powers. But if you look at, you know, if you read the Agenda 21, its supporting documents, it sums up what's necessary. It says, effective execution of Agenda 21 will require a profound reorientation of all human society, unlike anything the world has ever experienced. It requires a major shift in the priorities of both governments and individuals and an unprecedented redeployment of human and financial resources. This shift will demand that a concern for the environmental consequences of every human action be integrated into individual and collective decision-making at every level. Now, think about what that means to your life.
Yeah.
There's no privacy, no ownership of property, no private initiative. You can't even so much even have a family. There was the head of the, I believe it was someone who said, David Brower, who was the of the Sierra Club, and one of the participants in devising Gen 21. This is the mindset of these people. Childbearing should be a punishable crime against society unless the parents hold government license. Really? No.
Brave New World.
No. Right. No, what disembodied angel would hand out these licenses?
Disinterested party. And then the state has the power to both educate and vaccinate, where and the parent has no control over that, you're literally at the Brave New World. You are the Epsilons in the Delta class, and this is going to be forever, because once they have changed our DNA, it's going to be a little tough to rebel.
Well, there was
you're not going to result very well. Your median IQ is 60. Yeah.
And you're not going to have much procreation under these conditions anyway.
Right.
You know, outside the propaganda, the antinatalist propaganda. But there is, if you impoverish your people, don't let them go out and meet, and you can't gather. But there was I was reading that there's a children's book. I think there was either with the foreword was written by Boutros Ghali, the former Secretary General of the UN, and the book is for children. It's for kids, and it said in the book that every time a new birth is registered, Mother Earth groans. Really? By the way, they're giving that to children.
Yeah. So, I mean, there it is. We're just being hit right and left. The media is a 100% Masonic propaganda cesspool. Just don't let your kids participate in it. Good things are happening. I mean, homeschooling is a great idea that now is more and more people are doing, because the schools are exposed through this COVID online business. Mm-hmm. Now, we are going to very quickly need one another, because we're going to run out of money pretty fast. I mean, I look at these statistics of job loss, business destruction. It's simply unbelievable. I mean, we are going to be in a situation in less than 6 months where I don't see enough economic flow into the Gentile world to sustain the food, you know, for 2 or 3 months. I mean, it's coming on very, very quickly. Because without economic activity, you know, we will not have the capacity to feed ourselves. That's on the, you know, on the demand side. On the supply side, the food production is getting shut down every which way already. So we really need to move quickly into a state of rebellion. What's keeping us is the propaganda is a dense forest to get information through. We really have to take advantage of the irrationality of the lockdown of COVID, and of course the anger over the, at the very least, massive incompetence to starve everyone, to transition that energy into clear-mindedness and rebellion. We just have to do it. There isn't really, at this point, there's just no other alternative.
Well, I don't think there's ever been a case where there's been such a gap between like government propaganda and rhetoric and reality.
Yeah.
In the past, there's always been at least some linkage somewhere where you could see where their narrative can hold some water in the eyes of the public. But now there's such here you have this reality where there's really nothing going on, and you have all the, you know, the media and the government officials still talking as if there's a horrible pandemic with hundreds of thousands of people dying, you know, every month, and that simply isn't happening. At what point, there's got to be a credibility crisis here, you'd think. But the propaganda seems to be so strong. And this goes back to the whole, look what they've done with with sports. They've destroyed sports. Right? You know, like, I was watching. I saw a highlight of a college football game, and you had, you know, every 30 feet you had people standing watching the game in the stands. So you had social distancing. But all this this creates the illusion or the presentation that something is abnormal when it really is normal. So it justifies. Same with the mask. Right? Yeah. So it creates it maintains the fear, it maintains the theatrics of a crisis, of a problem, when there's nothing there. And now people just kind of perfunctorily wear a mask and these things, and they're not really fearful of anything. You're just almost out of habit going, behaving this way.
Right. And the fact that they do, as you pointed out, it just underlines the impression that there is something real to the virus.
Mm-hmm.
It would really help if people just took their masks and burned them and just took the consequences, because the more little rebellions like that that go on, the more the signal gets sent to the other people that this is not real.
It's all pervasive, because I was just boys are playing Little League baseball, and they've issued masks with Little League insignias on them. They don't wear the masks. But see, it's becoming it's the same, like, remember back in like May or June, they started wearing masks. The governors were wearing masks with their state flag on them or something, and there's the American flag one, and then there's certain styles and these things, the way that people respond to these things. But it's normalizing the abnormal.
I'm having one of my favorite internet bloggers. She makes a product, which is a mask that has the words useless prophylactic. So like, if they kick me out of Trader Joe's, but I have to get the frozen blueberries, I can at least come back in and make a statement. But I'm really getting more aggressive. And God help anyone that tries to lecture me if I'm not wearing the mask, because I'm just not in a mood at this point to put up with stupidity.
Yeah, there was a protest in Florida, the Target, where the crowd stormed the Target. So we're not going to take it. Don't wear the mask.
Yeah.
And they're filming them. And the person filming is calling them idiots. Like, really? Look at yourself. You know. But these are all younger people, by the way, weren't doing it. And apparently the store was fined, and then the people were fined, but I don't know how they collect the fine, because to collect the fine, you would have to ask them why they weren't wearing a mask, which is a violation of HIPAA regulations. But apparently some of the people were known activists down there. And again, it goes back to this court case, whereas these orders, the justification for the orders is the emergency. But if there is no factual basis for the emergency, then any order, that's supposedly is invalid. I mean, it's
the case. Demick was the last wad they could shoot, because now it's transparent that the relationship between the virus and fatality is not even anywhere near the level of the flu. I mean, these people like in Ohio and in England who are trying to justify the lockdown, when they did it originally, they had the horror of the unknown. And they had, the whole population had been watching zombie movies for the last 4 years. And so they were just scared already, and they're easy to get them to accept it. And it was only going to flatten the curve for a couple of weeks, so it was no big deal. But they had the horror of the fantasy, right? They had this, oh my God, 5 million people are going to be dead in the UK. But now that's impossible. It's impossible because they were able to get this last shot with the case demic, where they got all these new cases, but the death rate didn't go up at all. The public now had, it's just completely transparent. And this is the basis, as you point out, this should be the basis for rebellion. Yeah. So let's hope that this happens. Let's hope that the government does overplay their hand, demands a Melbourne-like lockdown everywhere, but the public is not going to believe it, because the horror, the fantasy that worked the first time is not possible now. And so when the public cottons on, then the protests will grow more aggressive. Because bear in mind, I mean, they are, you can see how their plan is progressing. You can see what they want. You can see, imagine us in 5 years, totally locked down, mask wearing, vaccinated, sterile. I mean, it's pretty easy to see where the Gentiles would be if they can pull this off.
Yeah.
But to get this across, they have to now use concepts which are demonstrably fake, like the lethality of the COVID. And they also have to get the vaccine, the DNA vaccine, to make sure we don't have enough brain power to figure out what's happening to us. Well, getting those things done, twixt the cup and the lip are many a slip, because these are going to be complicated things to actually put in place. already there is an enormous resistance. I mean, even the polls, which I think are fake, are saying it's over 60% in the U.S. have said they aren't going to take a DNA vaccine, which is good. This is kind of like passing the basic IQ test. So there, you can see there are opportunities now for rebellion.
What was it, Robert Redfield, who said that the vaccine is less effective than wearing a mask?
Yeah.
I mean, since the masks are BS, what does that say about the vaccine? Jeez, I mean, this is the same guy who said that the chances of dying from COVID is 1 in 1 million if you're a college or school age kid. I mean, okay, at that point, you're like, no crisis then. I mean, compare it relative to other risks in life. I mean, come on. But I think what shows how controlled the political process is. You'd think if, you know, with at the very least imposing lockdowns, shutting down hundreds of thousands of small businesses, creating a situation where up to 28 million Americans are facing imminent eviction, the exploding of the national debt. You'd think there would be some political resistance from one of the major political parties. And, you know, you think the Republicans would be speaking up against this, and they're not. You don't see any major political figures. You know, Donald Trump a little bit, but he's on and on, off of it. You know,
he just it's incrementalism. Masks should be, you know, a personal decision. The vaccines won't be mandated. He always gives a hope, but then at the end of the day, he's just another oligarch.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, my point is, if the political process had any credibility, that you'd have a sizable portion, many political figures, elected officials, using this kind of as a political issue in the upcoming election, but they're kind
of
avoiding
it. Don't hear it. You know that both parties are compromised.
Yeah, you know,
absolutely.
Which is why no political party's ever taken on Agenda 21. Oh, I mean, these treaties weren't passed, and it was hard to get these passed legislatively, so they're implemented, surreptitiously under the table. Now, like I said, you don't have any. For the longest time, if you talked about Agenda 21, you were called a conspiracy theorist, even though, you know, it's on the table. So, yeah, you know, it's one of these things. But it's one of these things where, you know, you would think, given what they're trying to achieve and what they've done, you'd have much more overt political opposition to it. And you're not seeing that, you know.
No, and there should have been a strong man, to use an expression, rise up to gather in all of the populist anger and take it into a political position. It hasn't happened.
Well, in a free society, if we lived in a free society with a free press and a free political process, you'd have at least a sizable minority of politicians, of newspapers, and even the media at least addressing some of the issues we're talking about, because we're not crazy, are we? You know.
Well, not when they're trying to lock down Britain a second time, and they have a fatality rate of like 5 people a day with the same amount of cases as they had originally when they you know had all like 4,000 cases and 1,000 deaths a day. I mean, when you get to these mathematical certainties showing that the COVID is not lethal in any way, and yet they are expanding restrictions that have been so destructive to the economy and the psychological health of the citizens, right? So there isn't any longer any rationale at all other than this is genocide, this is a slave state, this is a dictatorship.
You have the Prime Minister of Great Britain's implementing a law, which I don't know if there was passed through Parliament or just getting emergency powers. But now you have a situation where police in Great Britain are going to be walking around on the street, social distancing marshals, I guess with a ruler or a stick, making sure people are at least 2 meters apart. And this is the law.
Hilarious. I mean, who thought this up, where you can only have 6 people? I mean, of course, they're trying to stop assembly.
Yes.
Because they can see that would be a weakness. If the public could actually get together in hundreds, they could exchange information and become old. So they keep them in these little tiny impotent groups. But this is hilarious, because imagine going into a pub with 5 friends, and then there you are. Well, won't you interact with another group of six that's sitting next to you? Well, what has been achieved? It's just
but you have to give your full you have to give your ID and full contact information before you can order a beer.
It's they want to take us into the Epsilon and the Delta class, a perpetual slave state. Well, we have to fight back. And it's obvious what they're doing. It's obvious how their techniques at this point, and it needs to be obvious because so many of us are incapable of thinking clearly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as the hunger and as the Melbourne type restrictions get worse, the slavery gets worse, more intense. I just hope that this opens some mind. People are open to suggestions of new ideas, new ways of looking at the government, new ways of analyzing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, again, it's an opportunity.
So. It's an opportunity, Tim.
Okay, Joe.
Tim, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Enjoy. Take it easy.
Or
bye-bye.
We'll see you, but we will talk.
Yeah, bye-bye. All
right, bye-bye.